You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Phoebe, not often do we do no preparation when we have a guest in, but there's no point me telling you that this man was coming in, because he is going to tell you exactly why he's in here, and he can do it better than any preparation I can do. I know exactly who he is and how he came to be part of his world indirectly, if you like. But his name is Cameron Miller. And he is the father of the late Sean Miller. And Sean Miller, he will tell you, Cameron will, in his own words, came onto the footy show at request of Sean, the late Sean Miller, Cameron's son, came onto the footy show because he wanted to, one of his last wishes was, I think, hope I'm not being too hyperbolic here, which make an exaggeration, I think he's one of his last wishes before he maybe left the planet is that he wanted to come on and be on the footy show. So, Cameron, I want you to tell me just the how that came about your son, and we've got plenty of questions, but you, Phil, you introduce yourself and say why you're here, please.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. That was a very nice introduction. Yeah, how that all come about is a woman called Eva Nicholas contacted Sam, and she spoke to Sam about Sean's plight. And
tell us why we're speaking about Sean and what Sean's plight was.
Yeah, so Sean was born with what's called childhood congenital heart disease. 8 babies are born with it a day, and sadly 4 pass away every single week. And Sean, in his young 17 years, went through a lot of operations, went through 2 heart transplants, 1,000 operations. And when he got told he didn't have long left to live, he did a YouTube video called My Final Goodbye. And he wanted to say goodbye to everyone he loved. And it went viral. It went viral.
Around the world.
Went viral. It's been seen by over 8 million people. It's been on the Dr. Phil show. It's been on Google. It just went crazy. And Sean talks about, in the video, about living life to the fullest, and it's the footprints you leave behind. And when Sean, talked about dying, and he said, I want to go on the football show. And I'm like, oh, God, how's that going to happen? Anyway, we knew a woman called Evelyn Nicholas, and she was actually friends with Sam. She actually made it happen. She rang Sam. And I'll never forget the day that Sam rang me. It was on a Saturday morning, and he said, "Hi, Cameron, I'm Sam." I didn't believe it. I said, "Really?" So, and he said, "I'd like Sean to come on the football show on the Thursday night." And when I told Sean, because Sean was sitting next to me, the joy that Sean had in his eyes was incredible. And I'll never forget the day.
Now, just so Sean had also already received his second heart.
Yeah, 13. His second heart of 13.
13, yeah. And he wanted, because he did he realise or had the intuition that his time is not long with us?
Yeah, he did. He actually
come, make sure you're speaking in the microphone, please.
Yeah, he did.
And so he wanted, just as a make a wish, if you like. Yeah. Found out he just wanted to come on the footy show because he loved footy and all. Yes. That, and he loved the show. And he realised he didn't have long left.
No, and he wanted to meet you. And I'll never forget the day that we were preparing for the football show. He had to go into the Royal Children's Hospital, and he said to me, because he had a PICC line, it threw here up into his heart. And he said to me, Dad, I'm not going into the football show as a sick kid. So he went into the Children's Hospital, mm-hmm. And he wanted all the tubes taken out of
him.
He
did.
So I said, are you sure, Sean? He said, yes, I want them all out. So we went into the Children's Hospital early in the morning, had them all taken out, and we prepared for the football show that night. So we drove down to the Docklands, and I'll never forget, we were in the audience, and Sam comes out to me. I'll never forget what he said. He goes, do you mind if we show Sean's scar on the footy show? And I said, you can't ask me. You've got to ask the boss, because Sean was the boss.
Yep.
And I said, Sean goes, no, that's fine. That's fine, Sam. And we weren't expecting for Sam to invite Sean up on the football show, because we were just in the crowd. And Sean got up and basically jumped up like, you know,
lifted
man
him
possessed.
Under the desk.
Yes, man possessed. He jumped up like a man possessed and basically went on the football show with Sam Newman and, you know, Joe Watson. And that was an amazing night. Really was.
And because we don't, because it's live to air, we don't tape any of it, I thought to show the gravity of what is going on here, people will think, oh yeah, he's had a little thing put in his. I wanted to show that he'd had his heart replaced twice.
Yeah.
He'd had two heart transplants. And to show the actual scar would just bring it home to people that this is actually fair dinkum, and this is we're not making this anything greater than it already is. It's this is a man that's probably not going to live much longer, and he's tried his hardest, and he's put this video out, and it's gone around the world, and people just couldn't believe it. So it had tremendous reaction to it, and people said, oh, you shouldn't have asked him to show his scar. I said, I'm very glad I did ask him to show his scar, because people thought, ah, actually, this is fair dinkum, and it showed it, the gravity of it now. Now, so we've jumped right ahead, probably a bit, Cameron.
Yep.
So this has consumed your life.
It has.
You did every single thing. How did Sean come to get his first heart, and who gave it to him, and how did that journey start?
Yeah, that's a long journey too. He had before he got his first heart transplant at 8 years old, he had what's called a Fontan. They were trying to knit the heart so it would basically pump properly. And I'll never forget as long as I live. We walked into the children's hospital, and he was only 8 years old, and he goes to me, Dad, I'm not feeling very well. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Sean? And all of a sudden, he just threw up blood everywhere. And I rushed him upstairs, and he was going into major heart failure. He needed 48 hours to get a heart, new heart. And everyone knows what organ donation is. Sometimes you wait years, some 6 months or... And they just said, look, Sean's going to need a heart in the next 48 hours, otherwise he's going to pass away at 8 years old. And they said, we want you to bring the family in to start saying goodbye to him, because we're not sure if we're going to get a heart.
And where did the heart come from? I presume, please don't say, this is not meant to be a flippant statement, yep. But I presume they don't have them in a refrigerator just waiting to be selected.
As Sean says, you just don't go to Coles to get a heart.
Yep.
They have to come from someone who dies. So it was coming to the 48-hour mark, and I got a call. I got called in by the doctors, and they said, we want you to take a phone call. And I said, okay, I'll take a phone call. They didn't tell me what it was for. They said, the doctor just turned to me and said, look, you've got 30 seconds to make a decision. There's a girl that's passed away, and there's a heart that's compatible with Sean. You've got 30 seconds to make a decision to take it. Of course, I said, I'll take it. So basically, doctor came in to Sean at 12:30, and he said, my boy, I'm going to save your life. We've got a miracle. A girl has passed away from a car accident, and a heart is on its way now.
So Cameron, so how incredible. So the girl's parents had to be involved and said they'd be happy for your son to receive. How old was the girl?
She was 13, but because of Sean was only 8, the actual heart was perfect size, yep, of Sean's cavity.
And you must have had an instant relationship with the parents of that poor girl.
You know what? I never got to meet the parents.
Didn't you?
But Sean always said in all his speeches, he always thanks the people that gave him a life.
that's extraordinary. And so he had the heart put in by this unfortunate girl who lost her life, and he we thought things might be okay, and it deteriorated after a while, did it?
He bounced back pretty well after 8 years old. He went through, I think he went for a bit of rejection because people don't understand when you get a heart, it's like a Band-Aid solution. It's and you're on all these anti-rejection medicine. So he bounced back pretty well. I've got a funny story. I'll never forget this. Matthew Lloyd came and visited him in hospital, right? And he you know, this is when Matthew Lloyd probably wasn't very media savvy. This was early in his career. I'll never forget as long as I live. He come in and goes, I want to meet Sean. And he bumped his head into the oversized overhead TV. Nearly knocked himself out. And Sean goes to him, what's wrong? What's wrong? He looked very nervous. He goes, I really need to go to the toilet, Sean. And Sean goes, yeah, that's fine. Just take a piss in there. That's okay. So, but Sean went really well from about 8 years old. And he just lived life to the fullest. And he became an ambassador of Heart Kids. And he just was loving life, loving school. And then 13 years old came. And they basically said his heart was going into major rejection.
After 5 years?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And he'd need another heart transplant. So Sean deteriorated pretty fast. I remember...
So when you told Sean that you're going to have to... He obviously didn't drop his bundle. He just said, well, if that's what needs to happen, it needs to happen.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how he put it.
And where did this heart come from?
And this heart came from a boy this time, a young teenager. So I'll never forget, he was deteriorating pretty bad where he couldn't walk from, say, here to the post office away, like the letterbox away, because the arteries are all closing over. And I remember one particular time the Children's Hospital said, look, we're going to just send him to the Alfred. We think he's going to have to get a stent put in just to open up his arteries while we're waiting for a transplant. I'll never forget this as long as I live. It was a wet, rainy day, and he was picked up in one of those transport ambulances, not the actual proper ambulance.
National Transport Patient Vehicle, I think they're called.
Correct.
Yeah, NPTVs.
So we're on Punt Road, and Sean had been getting a lot of angina attacks because of the blockage. And it was all happy-go-lucky in the back of the transport. All of a sudden, Sean goes into major, major angina pain. And the guys in the transport ambulance, their equipment was failing as well. So they were worried that Sean was going to go into a cardiac arrest. Mm. So I'll never forget, they rang through the Alfred, and the Alfred just said, go through every light, you've got to get him here. So anyway, he was okay. He got there and Sean had to have a stent put in to his heart at 13 years old.
This is the original heart.
Yeah, this
not is the transplant, not the second transplant.
This is the transplant.
The second transplanted heart.
Because he lost the first heart from CHD. The transplant heart is 8 years old.
Yeah.
And this is the 13. So the 13 one, because of CHD, childhood congenital heart disease, it basically starts to shut down all the arteries. So he had to have a stent put in at 13 years old at the Alfred, and that bought him 3 months.
So did you meet the parents of the...
No. They're very strict on transplant when it comes to young people.
Yeah.
Because they don't know...
They don't want it to become a... personal thing, they keep it at arm's length so that there's no emotion. Is that what they do?
Yeah, they don't know how the parents is going to cope.
No.
Meeting.
But the parents would know that it's going to a recipient.
Yes.
Did you ever think, didn't write to them or they didn't want any contact?
No.
I think.
So you or Sean never wanted to meet them?
I always wanted to meet
them. You always wanted
them? Yeah.
Fiona?
They were very strict.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually.
That's how it works.
Yeah, it's not a normal situation where the donor family would be introduced to the recipient family. And in fact, Darren Hinch is probably one of the few people that have met their donor families, met the parents of their donor.
In America it happens a lot, but not in Australia.
I thought it was just going to be a stereotype like you see in the movies or TV. They come face to face and they're like,
no.
Fair enough. That's must be it.
So, no. Okay, so... did you, you mightn't... Do you have a wife?
I've got a girlfriend. I was a single father with Sean, so.
Yeah, you were, yeah. Yeah. And did the mother of Sean be involved in any of this, or you might want to speak about that?
That's a sad part too, because how Sean came into my care is when Sean was waiting for a second heart transplant. This is where it gets interesting, and
Sean's mother.
Yep.
Did she distance herself from the whole thing, or was she there supporting?
She wasn't. I think that if the mother hadn't been with this particular man, things probably would have been different. And Sean would have had a different relationship with her as well.
Okay, sorry, yep.
So Sean, obviously being at that young of age, probably, did he want to have, like, towards the end, did he want to have any contact just as a goodbye or not really?
He did.
Okay, so clearly the second transplant happened.
Yeah.
And can you tell us what happened after that?
Yeah. After the second transplant, we were living in Dandenong, and he was going to co-offer college, and he was just loving life. As soon as he got that second heart, he just loved life and became an ambassador of Heart Kids. And he talked about writing a book. He goes, "I want to write a book, Dad." I'm like, "What do you want to write a book for?" He goes, "I'd love to write a book to not only tell people about CHD, tell people about bullying, and tell people just about life." So he started writing a book at 13 years old. Which was incredible.
And he had international recognition and fame, if you like. Yeah. Not that he wanted fame, but he had international recognition because of the video saying he thought he'll say goodbye to the world as he knew it. And he filmed that himself?
Yeah.
Or did you film it?
No, how that come about is we got released from the hospital. They said, "Look, we can't do anything more for Sean. He's dying. We can't do anything more. So it's best he goes home." And he said to me, I'll never forget. He said it to me when we got home. He goes, "I need to make this video, Dad." I'm like, "What are you talking about, Sean? What do you mean a video?" I said, "No, please don't do anything. You know, I'm thinking." Anyway, I went to bed, and he did a video, and he tried to upload it to Facebook and wouldn't work. So he uploaded it to YouTube. It had 100,000 hits at 4 hours in the morning. And my phone was going berserk because the video was going viral. Because people... But also the video was also hard
what
to...
What did he say on it?
He spoke about that he didn't have long left to live and basically live life to the fullest because you never know what's going to happen. And the video was interesting because it brought out a lot of trolls. I never forget some of the messages I was getting, like "Hurry up and die, Sean." Yep. You know,
amazing, isn't it?
You know, because the heart wasn't working, he had a lot of fluid and he was quite swollen. Mm. So
people would get off on that.
Oh, some of the messages,
it's extraordinary.
Just, you know, about 4 days later, it was 1.7 million, and then media were contacting us, 3RW, everyone was contacting us. Wanting to talk to Sean, it sort of became a media frenzy, let's just say. And I was staggered by some of the individuals and some of the horrible messages and some of the like Sam was talking about how people just want their 5 minutes of fame these days. And how social media has made these people feel like that they can write anything about anyone.
Just because their name's not on it, they think they can get away with it.
Yeah.
So, Cameron, pretty traumatic to film almost your own death. But was he on drugs? Pain drugs?
No. He was on nothing. He was only on his heart medicine, and that was it.
Phoebe, so how long after the video went out did he pass away?
Well, he went on the football. The video was May 1st. He went on the football show 2 weeks later, and then 2 weeks later he passed away.
And as a result of this, just moving well forward, you had some approaches from some people to make a film now, and the man, I've just forgotten his name.
Alan Finney.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Alan. I know Finney. Alan really well. I just had a mental block there. We spoke about Alan last week.
And I said,
and I couldn't even think of the Awesome Ride, which was an Awesome Ride, which is the name of a film that is still under consideration. Yes. Tell us.
Yeah.
So just tell us about how the film An Awesome Ride and Alan Finney came to be part of making this a film.
Yeah, so I'll go back to Alan Finney. I met Alan Finney in 2006 because I got mentored by Alan Finney in film distribution, and we're very good, very good friends. Alan's also the chairman of the Sean Miller Foundation. How that come about is I said to Alan, I wanted Alan to join the foundation, which he joined, and then Alan said, okay, I'll join the foundation, but I think Awesome Ride needs to be made into a movie. It's an extraordinary story about life, hope, love. And he said, I think the Awesome Ride book will be the marketing arm of the foundation. So this is where it gets interesting. I said to Alan, I'm having some issues with a publisher and all this sort of stuff, and off Sean's book. He said, oh, you know, let's not worry about that. So Alan reaches out to Russell Crowe. And we go up and meet Russell Crowe's partner, and Russell Crowe wanted to buy the rights. And he said to me in personal emails that he finds Awesome Ride one of the most extraordinary stories he's ever read, and it can be A Beautiful Mind.
And yeah, Beautiful Mind.
Yeah,
yep.
And this is where it gets more interesting. So Alan and I hop on a plane. We go to Fox Studios. We meet Keith Rogers. That's Russell Crowe's partner. And
Is it Fox in the States or here?
In Sydney.
In Sydney. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we went up there, flew up there, and it was interesting because Alan's a walker. He walks 5K every day at 77 years old. He's an amazing man. And I don't know if people know his career. 30 years at Village Roadshow, 16 years at Disney. He's created nearly every Australian film. Chairman of the Academy Awards Australia. He's an amazing man. So we went up to Fox Studios. We sat with Keith Rogers. And they started talking about buying the rights to the story. And everything was going really well. Then I get a call from Alan. And he said, there's a publisher in Sydney who's claiming he owns the IP rights of Sean. He's claiming that he owns the IP of Sean's book. This is the publisher. Russell Crowe really wanted to buy the rights, but they stepped out because... what was interesting was Russell Crowe's lawyer, that was the publisher's lawyer. And they, as I said, it got messy. Russell Crowe wanted to do it. But only in the last 3 months I got it cleared that the publisher doesn't own anything. That's including IP or anything, after we'd spent 2 years writing the script. Alan's a person like me. I don't give up. He doesn't give up. So we've backed in again. We've got a new producer called Tony Ganain who's going to produce An Awesome Ride, hopefully starting in March.
And you've found someone to play Sean? Are you searching for that?
We're searching for that. Shane Jacobson would like to play me, he said,
yes.
Which is quite exciting. Which would be great for the foundation as well.
So this is still in the pipeline.
Still in the pipeline. Like as I said, we had Russell Crowe wanting to produce, direct, and write, be involved. That's how much he loved the story. So in 2009, after I did the football show, I was approached by Penguin Books to write my side of the story, and I agreed. So. As hard as it was, I put pen to paper and I wrote Through a Father's Eyes. And Penguin said, we'd like to put Sean's book in An Awesome Ride. So I finished the manuscript, Through a Father's Eyes. It was quite a difficult write. Writing about, you know, because Sean had already written Awesome
Pretty
Ride.
Pretty traumatic for you to sit down and do it. You seem to have come through the emotion of it, time's a great healer, but you would have been hard for you to concentrate on it, I presume.
It was. I've got a saying about grief. Sometimes with grief, Sam, you'll probably know this, that sometimes there are big waves and sometimes there are small waves. And, you know, you throw a pebble in the lake and even the fish feel it. So it was quite an emotional journey writing Through a Father's Eyes. And everything was going really well with Through a Father's Eyes. Penguin had released it. I did some media, Channel 7, Koshy and all this sort of stuff. And he turned to Penguin and he said, I own the IP of this book. So Penguin, Penguin did an investigation and they realised Sean didn't have a will and what he was saying wasn't right. But unfortunately, Penguin still sacked me, took my book off the shelf, which was quite devastating to us and the foundation, because it's hurt the foundation dearly, all these, I call them trials and tribulations, but I haven't given up.
So the book was printed by Penguin?
But they left it on the, it was on the shelf for only about 4 weeks and they took it off. But this, Australia wide.
This came about because Sean didn't have a will? Because
no, because the publisher, basically the publisher was, do you know what a ghostwriter is?
Yeah.
The ghostwriter agreed to ghostwrite Sean's book with his words.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's now some interesting thing. Because of the media had done, certain people had called the Australian Non-For-Profits Commission and the Australian government started an investigation on me. That
on you?
That I was up for fraud because the book, the money for the book had, was supposed to be going to the foundation. And I was cleared. I was cleared. I was exonerated. We're still dealing with them at the moment, doing all the paperwork. But I was exonerated of fraud with the Australian Non-For-Profits Commission, which was absolutely disgusting. And I felt, not, you know, when you go through this much hell with a sick child and you're trying to help other people, and then someone goes and complains, and they had 2,000 complaints about me, about my book, about because the money was supposed to be going to the foundation. So they had to do a major investigation. We're still under an enforcement on the foundation, which we're clearing now. It's cost me $30,000 legally to get it all out of the way, which is done by Moore's lawyers, which has been done at the moment. So
Cameron, where did you buried Sean?
Yeah, Sean.
What happened to Sean?
Yeah, I buried Sean over Whittlesea Way.
In a cemetery?
Yeah, yep. He gave me strict instructions because I was a mess. I didn't know what to do. Mm. And I'll never forget one day, one week after the footy show, I was on the couch and I was just crying. I'm like, you know, just about the whole thing. He slaps me right across the face and he goes, I told you not to cry for me. Don't cry for me. And this is my instructions, what I want. I want my book published, Awesome Ride. I want to be buried in a coffin somewhere in the country, and I want to be buried in a Essendon suit.
Wow. Now, Cameron, did... So it was a ceremony, a private ceremony? Did his mother come to that?
It was actually... one thing I look back and regret is I made the funeral public. We had over 2,000 people turn up to his funeral.
Was his mother one of them?
She was one of them, and so was the stepfather. That was interesting as well. That was a very hard, incredibly hard day. We were supposed to bring his coffin out through a hall part, but because of the media had swarmed, I had to carry him nearly 50 metres around into the car. That was a very hard day at one stage. So I'll never forget when this guy called Zane, he actually was on the football show. I remember Sam looking at him, mixed martial artist, and he becomes Sean's bodyguard and protector. So, yeah, as you were saying with the cemetery, that was amazing. So Sean asked for a headstone. And I said to him, he told me exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, Sean set out everything out in his death about how he wanted things done. And I'm like, how do you want it? He goes, so we've got a beautiful headstone in the shape of a football as well.
So I tell you, it's an amazing...
It's an extraordinary story. And as you say, you've set up the Sean Miller Foundation... Tell us, Cameron, how would you like your son to be remembered? What is Sean's legacy?
Yeah, with how the foundation come about, which was extraordinary, was I was trying to work out what I was going to do in my life. Because because Sean had been such a part of my life for such a long time, and I was, you know, I was having trouble dealing with life again. How, like, when you lose someone very close to you, and they've been a part of you for a long time, getting back to normality is very hard. So I was trying to work out what I was going to do. So I'll never forget, in 2016, I went to bed, and something very, very strange happened. I went to bed and I had a dream, and Sean came to me in a dream, and he said to me, "Dad, I want you to start a foundation in my name." I woke up the next day thinking, what do I know about starting a foundation? So I couldn't not do it. So I rang a guy called Darren Brown, KCL Law, and I said to him, I want to start a foundation. And I had no idea what was involved. I had no idea the paperwork, what was involved, and I had no idea what the cost was involved. But we started that journey in 2016, and we basically got registered, and then I had to look for boards and all this sort of stuff. And the first person I went to was Alan Finney, and I said, Alan, I've known you for 25 years, mate. I want you to come along this journey with me. And he said, you know what, Cameron, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to help.
Well, Phoebe and Max, we've all at various times known a bit of grief, but this just about tops it. The foundation is up and running. I was at a meeting with you on Friday. I'm just not a board man. I'm just no good on the board, but I'm happy to try and help in any way I can other than that. So it's an amazing story, and if there's anything else you want to ask Cameron, Phoebe, I'm not sure, but I reckon that just about speaks for itself, all that.
I would ask one final question. For anyone who's listening who is dealing with loss or dealing with grief, do you have any simple advice? And simple's not the right word, but do you have any advice for people dealing with grief?
Yeah, one thing I've learned about grief is it's as I said, it's a thing that you got to take your time with it. You got to learn from it, but you can't let it consume you. You can't let it consume you. Or why I say you can't let it consume you is after and I'm not afraid to say it. I spoke about it in my book. About 6 months after everything with Sean, I had a complete nervous breakdown, and I was put in a mental hospital for 10 days, and that helped me a lot, but it was also hard to deal with that as well, because I was in there and I'm thinking, how did all this happen? But looking back over everything that's happened in my life, the one thing I have to say to anyone dealing with grief, it doesn't matter whether it's CHD, whether it's illness, whether it's disease, whether it's accident, it doesn't matter. It's don't let grief consume you. Don't let it sit with you. Try move forward. Try be productive, because if you don't let it, if you don't do all these things, it will consume you. And it'll take you to some dark places.
Are you a believer? Do you believe in a higher authority, or did you just you're not into that side of existence?
I've got something to say to you about that too. Let me digress. Remember how I said that Sean had a transplant 8 years old? Before he got that heart, we were sitting in the Royal Children's Hospital, and all of a sudden he looked up to the sky like this. It was completely dark, and I was there. I hadn't drunk. I hadn't drinking anything. I hadn't had anything. All of a sudden, I looked up to the roof, and a light appeared on the roof, like this. And
really,
I saw it with my own two eyes.
Yeah,
I swear on a pack of Bibles. And Sean started talking to the roof up here, like this, going, and I was trying to listen in, what he was saying, and I couldn't work out what he was saying. And he spoke to this person for 15 minutes. And he woke up from this trance and he said, Dad, I've got some amazing news. I'm going to get a heart. I said, Sean, what are you talking about? We don't even know if you're going to get a heart. He goes, I walked through a tunnel and an old man told me, you're going to get a new heart, Sean, and you've got work to do.
Well, there's something going on the planet that we don't quite comprehend. So, Cameron Miller, father of the late Sean Miller, and coordinator of An Awesome Ride, and you've had a tremendous journey, a tremendously complicated journey, and we thank you for coming in to
You
Cannot Be Serious. Cameron Miller, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam.
Because you ain't treating me right. Come back again.